Radio Corporation of America presents The Magic Key. Magic Key turns, and the family of RCA, whose members include RCA Victor, RCA Communications, and the National Broadcasting Company, unite to present over the nationwide NBC Blue Network a full hour of entertainment featuring Kirsten Torborg, famed contralto of the Metropolitan Opera Company, Gertrude Lawrence, brilliant English stage and screen actress, Walter Damrosch, distinguished composer and conductor, David and Goliath, popular new comedy act, Frey and Brajotti, renowned piano duo, Raya Garbuzova, talented young cellist, and Frank Black conducting the NBC Symphony Orchestra, who opened this afternoon's program with Wolf Ferrari's overture to the opera Secret of Suzanne. November, over the Blue Network of the National Broadcasting Company, a program called Professional Parade was heard for the first time. On its initial broadcast, Bert Swore and Lou Lubin, known as David and Goliath, made an outstanding hit, and since then they have enjoyed several successful return engagements on that program. This afternoon they are again in Radio City, where, as the magic key turns, we hear them in the roles of David and Goliath.
What's the matter with you? Can't take you out no place you don't make a monkey out of what? I started out this morning to bring you in town, have a good time, and bring you up here to see this your RCA program, and doggone if you ain't trying to make a monkey out of everybody up here. What I want to know is what is your idea in doing that? Well, don't stand there and look like a fool. Say something.
You see, I was.
Oh, shut up. Can't take you out of no place. Down that party last night, you got in them arguments, got made a monkey out of me and everybody down there. You're disgracing everybody. That folks over there in that corner using that argument, they was arguing about politics. And I look around and doggone if you ain't got your big mouth in it. Why don't you keep your big mouth shut?
Well, you see, I was.
Oh, shut up. You know nothing about politics, so I does. And then when Congress meets Washington down there in Philadelphia next week, and they come and pass around them new laws, bylaws, in-laws, and outlaws, you know what's going to happen down there then, don't you?
Yeah, I say,
you know what's going to happen down there then, don't you?
Yeah, there's more taxes.
They've got to have them taxes. Taxes, that's what keeps the political monotony in disgust.
Well, if they let the people...
The people what?
Well, let the people have the referendum on the bicentennial of the tax. There'd be no sales tax, which you can't. But that is right there. You see,
they couldn't do that.
Why can't they do it?
Why if they ever do that? Then our financial redestruction subcommittee company, they would have to give us the 18th commandment along with their consumption.
Yeah.
And that would disrupt the immigration to capital punishment.
Yeah, that.
And we need it.
Oh man, what are you talking about? What we need? What we need is the moratorium to the unemployment of the disagreements. See that alone is right there. You see.
Boy, they couldn't do that.
Why can't they?
Why, if they'd ever do that, then our domestic relations would cause our banks to swell and bust with cirrhosis of the vault. Causing an unnecessary disruption to the agricultural inflammatory.
Yeah, that... Oh, man, they could never do that.
Why not?
If they ever did that, that would, you know what that means?
What it means?
Oh, man, you see that? If they ever did that, they can't do it.
Why can't you do it?
Well,
I said, why can't you do it?
Well, you see, that would put us on the basis of,
The base of what?
Well, the basis of...
Oh, shut up. You talking about basis, and I'm trying to explain to you the overproduction and economy.
Yeah, what is that economy? What's that?
You don't know what that is?
Well, what is that?
I'm going to explain to you. You see, economy is this. Now, suppose I got me a great big field of radishes, and I want to take my radishes to the market, so I comes over and I borrows your horse.
Yeah, but I ain't got no horse.
You have a horse for instance.
Yeah, but I'd rather have him for riding because I got...
Is you going plumb crazy? Now listen, I comes over and I borrows your horse to take my radishes to the market. And for the use of your horse, I gives you radishes. Now, what is that?
Sounds like a lot of horse radish to me. That's not
horse radish. You say, listen here, I'll explain so maybe I can understand it. Now listen here. The United States sends wheat to Russia. And in return, Russia sends us caviar.
Wait a minute. Well, what is that caviar? What's that?
Well, that's eggs.
That's a roe.
That's roe.
Huh?
Roe of eggs. That's what your fish is.
You have to put them in a roe?
Don't roe them at all. It's fish eggs.
Yeah.
It's just like, listen here. I'll make it plain to you. Now, listen here. You see, the Chinese, they send us rice, tea, and silk. And in return, what does we send to the Chinese?
Dirty laundry?
We don't send them dirty laundry.
I won't send my children.
Oh, I know what you send.
Shut up!
You talking about dirty laundry, and I'm talking about nations with which we have trade relations.
Yeah, but, boy, that's what I'd like to do.
You like to do what?
Trade relations. I'd like to trade my mother-in-law for...
Shut up! What has your mother-in-law got to do with the economy?
Well, she always talks on that economy business.
Your mother-in-law talks on economy?
Yeah, on economy not going to work. That's what it is.
Oh, that kind of you not going to work. Say, listen, I'm talking about the overproduction of the relief situation.
I know all about that relief business.
Oh, you just don't
know.
Well,
I'm glad
you know something. You're so smart, you know about the relief situation. Now tell me what would be the biggest relief for the people of this country right now.
Yeah, the biggest relief?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the biggest relief.
Would be what? Would be what?
Well, the biggest relief would be for you and I to get off here and stop this messing around any longer. That's
all right. Come on, now, let's get on off here. Come on, let's get off.
For many years, Victor has been proud of the distinguished list of artists who record exclusively for Victor. Last week, new laurels were added to Victor's prestige in the field of recorded music when the results of the New York World Telegram's nationwide poll of radio editors were announced. For, among the radio performers who make records, 9 out of 11 orchestras are Victor bands, and 10 out of 11 classical singers and 8 out of 9 conductors are Victor recording artists. This, together with the Victor reputation for acoustical perfection, helps explain why Victor Records set the standard of excellence for recorded music throughout the world. Many infant prodigies never fulfill their youthful promise. But one notable exception is Raya Garbuzova, a young Russian girl who astounded the musical world when she was only 12 years old by giving cello recitals and appearing as guest star with a great European symphony orchestra. Miss Garbuzova has more than lived up to her promising youthful star, and today she is recognized as one of the most talented of all cellists. She recently arrived in New York to start her second American tour. The magic key of RCA turns to Raya Garbuzova. Miss Garbuzova turns to Chopin's rich album of music, choosing for her first number his Nocturne in C-sharp minor, Wolfgang Rebner at the piano. Daria Garbuzova plays as her next selection, Vivo, a composition of Francoeur. Saturday afternoon, over the NBC Blue Network, the Radio Corporation of America will sponsor another broadcast of a complete Metropolitan Opera Company performance when Jules Massenet's Manon will be presented. The title role of Manon will be sung by Bidu Sayão, a young Brazilian soprano who will make a Metropolitan debut at this performance. In this series of weekly opera broadcasts, it has been the good fortune of radio listeners to hear the voice of the great Swedish contralto, Kirsten Torborg. Patrons of the Metropolitan Opera Company were elated last fall at the announcement that Kirsten Torborg had been engaged for the current season. Madame Torborg's glorious voice has been heard on three of the Saturday afternoon broadcasts of the opera, and today we are fortunate in having her here in the studio, where she will make her last radio appearance before returning to Europe. The magic key turns to Kirsten Torborg. First number, Kirsten Torborg has chosen the aria Ich habe sie verloren from the third act of Christopher Gluck's opera Orpheus.
Oh,
Rager's composition, The Virgin Slumber Song, is Madame Torborg's next selection. Concluding number, Kirsten Torborg has selected the Spring Song by Eugene Hildar. Some weeks ago, David Sarnoff, president of the Radio Corporation of America and chairman of the board of the National Broadcasting Company, invited Signor Arturo Toscanini, the world's greatest conductor, to return to America and broadcast a series of symphonic concerts with the National Broadcasting Company Symphony Orchestra over its nationwide network. In order to place this proposal before Signor Toscanini and to discuss with him the matters involved in such an undertaking, Mr. Sarnoff sent the celebrated music critic Samuel Schotzenoff to Milan, Italy, home of the conductor. Mr. Sarnoff is indebted to David Stern, publisher of the New York Evening Post, for the services of Mr. Schotzenoff. Utilizing the most modern means of communication, including the transoceanic radio telegraph and radio telephone systems, the negotiations between Signor Toscanini in Milan and Mr. Sarnoff in New York were expedited, and a contract has been signed covering the exclusive services of Arturo Toscanini for these radio concerts. This series of programs will not be presented commercially and will be given the widest possible distribution over the air as sustaining broadcasts of the National Broadcasting Company. While no definite date has been established for the concerts to begin, the planning and preparation needed for them will be concluded in time to inaugurate the series at the end of 1937. On behalf of the National Broadcasting Company, Mr. Sarnoff wishes to take this opportunity to express his gratitude over Signor Toscanini's decision to return to America. Mr. Sarnoff believes the incomparable genius of Signor Toscanini will further stimulate and enrich musical appreciation in our country. The great Italian conductor is exceedingly enthusiastic over the prospect of his return to America, as is shown by the following radiogram. Quote, "My dear Mr. Sarnoff, I am very happy to accept your invitation to broadcast a series of symphonic concerts over the National Broadcasting Company networks. It is a great pleasure for me to think that I shall be able to put myself once more in touch with the radio public, which gave me in my last season with the Philharmonic the greatest proof of its appreciation and sympathy. Signed, Arturo Toscanini." In presenting this concert series, the National Broadcasting Company is pursuing its policy of bringing to millions of listeners the greatest artists the world has to offer. The Magic Key, unlocking a world of entertainment. Featuring today, Kirsten Torborg, Gertrude Lawrence, Walter Damrosch, David and Goliath, Rayan Brojotti, Raya Garbuzova, and Frank Black in the NBC Symphony Orchestra, presented for your interest and pleasure by the members of the family of RCA, the Radio Corporation of America. For more than 50 years, Dr. Walter Damrosch has led the movement to further the understanding and love of good music among the people of America. During the 43 years he conducted the New York Symphony Society Orchestra, he introduced to American audiences many great artists and the works of several great composers. There is hardly a page in the contemporary musical history of America in which the name of Walter Damrosch does not figure prominently. For the past 10 years, he has been actively associated with the National Broadcasting Company as music counsel and conductor of the NBC Music Appreciation Hour. Last week, Walter Damrosch celebrated his 75th birthday, still working toward his goal of bringing music into the life of every American. We are privileged to have him with us this afternoon in the studio. The magic key turns now to Dr. Walter Damrosch.
Good afternoon, my friends. It is a great pleasure indeed to appear for a few minutes at these wonderful Sunday afternoon concerts of the Radio Corporation. I certainly owe a lot to Mr. Sarnoff, its president. For 9 years ago, he entered eagerly, readily, the suggestion of mine to let me give my young people's concert, which we had given at Carnegie Hall for so many years for 2,800 young people, to give those over the radio for the public schools and colleges of America. Well, he immediately said, go ahead, do anything you like. And I did. And the result is that today I have the joy, the exhilaration, if not the exaltation, of talking on music and playing music for the young people of America to the tune of, I don't know, my statisticians say 6 million every Friday morning. I have only one regret, and that is that the studying population of the United States of America is 12 million, that there are therefore still 6 million unconquered in the realm of music. However, I hope that all this talk about my 75th birthday will cease. From now on, there shall be no more celebrations until my 100th birthday. And I intend to conduct that celebration myself, and you're all invited. We shall now play for you the National Broadcasting Orchestra a third movement from Johannes Brahms' Third Symphony, an exquisite autumnal twilight song. I love to listen to it with shut eyes because then I can imagine a lovely late afternoon in the autumn with the leaves falling, the sky perhaps slightly overcast, the whole music pervaded by a gentle, sweet melancholy.
an event took place which was of great interest to radio listeners throughout the nation. Radio's most famous piano duo, Jacques Frey and Mario Bragiotti, was again united before the microphone. Two pianos responded once more in unison to their sparkling orchestra. The magic key of RCA turns to present Jacques Frey and Mario Bragiotti, playing an arrangement by Mr. Bragiotti of George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue and Wonderful.
Of national pride, Gertrude Lawrence finds herself in the rather enviable position of having been born in England of an Irish mother and Danish father and on demand will produce documents to prove that she arrived in the world on the 4th of July. This gives Miss Lawrence tangible claim to no less than 4 countries, each of which would like to have her as its own. She has won the admiration and acclaim of audiences both here and in England for her performances in musical comedy productions, drama, and more recently in film. This season, she is co-starring with Noel Coward in a tremendously popular group of 9 short plays, in which she has added to her reputation for possessing extraordinary versatility. The magic key turns to bring you the distinguished English actress, Gertrude Lawrence.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. In England, our debutantes just now are looking forward to their coming out parties in June. But here I'm told this is the open season. So if you will keep an open mind, I will try to give you an impression of an American debutante's nightmare. This is written by Mr. Vernon Crane and is entitled Miss Bent Bows. Major and Mrs. Billington Bent invite you to tea, where they plan to present their debutante daughter, Miss Mary Louise, in front of a background of pastel sweet peas. The deb will be wrapped in a bolt of old lace. Elizabeth Arden is doing her face. There's music by Coleman and ices by Sherry, and a gang up from Princeton to help make Mary Louise's debut the event of the season. However, the liquor supplies them with reason for writing acceptance in due courtesies. Lord knows they're not tempted by Mary Louise. She'll stand at the door with her mother in satin, receiving 9/10 of the bores of Manhattan. She'll chat and she'll smile and invent things to say, while the interesting people sneak in the back way to grab off a drink and remark, "This is tame," and then turn about face and go out as they came. When Mary Louise feels, oh shucks, with receiving, she'll start her goodbyes to the guests who are leaving. Meanwhile, Major Bent's on his 10th scotch and soda. That's 5 or 6 over his usual quota. He's tight as a drum, and his thoughts are quite lost in wondering how much this thing's going to cost him. His wife, in a flurry and bright as a star, is dragging her sleeves through the fresh caviar while pouring the tea, as her governess taught her, for any young man who might marry her daughter. The room's overcrowded, whom too brightly lighted, and half of those present were never invited. They came for the pleasure of crashing the gate or swiping a bit of the Bent family plate. The music is grand, the refreshments are fine, and all but the debutante has a good time. Her pa's in his cups and her ma's in her glory. Tomorrow the news will deliver this story. Miss Bent bows. Quote, Major and Mrs. Bellington Bent tossed off a swank tea with the firmest intent of finding a husband for Mary Louise, the girl in the bolt of old lace with sweet peas. Her ma was the one with the satin and mink. Her pa was the guy with his nose in a drink. Miss Bent has been rated in Bradstreet, we note, as the season's most wealthy young lady. Unquote. The bachelors read and they fall on their knees. Lord knows they're attracted to Mary Louise. And so, poor Miss Bent bows. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I've been asked to sing a song which I sang in Charlotte's Review here in 1923, which first brought me to my success in America. And as this is my first appearance on the Magic Key Hour, I'm going to risk it again. I was standing on the platform, simply waiting for my train. And exactly how it happened, I never could explain. It was early in the evening, a little after 9. When I saw him saunter past me, then he turned, his eyes met mine. I don't know what attracted my attention. I don't know if I even stopped to think. I don't know if I smiled without intention. And I don't know if I really saw him wink. I don't know if I may have been mistaken, but I thought I saw a flutter of his lids. I don't know how I came to let my bag fall, but I do know he was awfully glad I did. When the train came in the station, there was hardly room to stand, but I fought my way on board it and he followed close at hand. And maybe I felt dizzy, or perhaps the train did sway. For I knew that I was falling. So, of course, I fell his way. I don't know if he really engineered it. I don't know if his strategy was planned. I don't know how we got squeezed in the doorway. And I can't think why I let him hold my hand. I don't know whether he was going homeward, or even if he lived upon that line. I don't know if we got out at his station. But I know we never got as far as mine. When the train came in the station, there was a taxi standing there. And he murmured as he hailed it. I say, can I drive you anywhere? Wait a second, I'm awfully sorry. Wait a minute, we've gone wrong here. I'm sorry now. Can we start again from the first season to that? Then we climbed a moving staircase. Where it was, I couldn't guess. At the barrier, I noticed he had to pay excess. At the entrance to the station was a taxi standing there. And he murmured as he hailed it. I say, can I drive you anywhere? I don't know if he saw my hesitation. I don't know what my mother would have said. So I murmured, well, just drop me near West Hempstead Station. And I can't think how we reached the Ritz instead. I don't know if he meant the things he whispered. I don't know what was really in his mind. Oh, I don't know what you think he did that evening. But I do know he did nothing of the kind.
During the past year, the broadcasting and transmitting equipment of the National Broadcasting Company has given thousands of hours of dependable service. The technical perfection of this equipment, designed by RCA engineers and built by RCA Victor, is truly amazing. Day in and day out, your radio programs are put on the air perfectly. The same dependable service is available to you in your home through RCA Victor radios, designed by the same RCA engineers. RCA Victor Magic Voice radios, with Magic Brain, Magic Eye, and RCA Metal Tubes, give reception which matches broadcast perfection, a fidelity made possible by the resources, experience, and facilities of the only organization that builds everything in radio, from microphones to receiving sets, the Radio Corporation of America. So make your reception RCA all the way, from the broadcasting studio to your living room, with a 1937 RCA Victor radio. Prices begin at $20. With 28 models for less than $100. Your dealer will arrange easy terms and generous trade-in allowances.
members of the family of RCA, which include RCA Victor, RCA Communications, Radio Marine, and the National Broadcasting Company, invite you to tune in to the NBC Blue Network next Sunday afternoon when the Magic Key will again turn to present another full hour of entertainment, an hour that will feature Gina Cigna, celebrated dramatic soprano with Metropolitan Opera Company, Viscount Hidemaro Konoya, famous Japanese conductor, Ruth Davis presenting another group of songs and imitations, Carlos Salcedo, internationally known harpist, Dennis King, Helen Gleason, and the chorus from the magnificent new Broadway musical, Frederica, John B. Kennedy, the noted NBC commentator, and Frank Black and the NBC Symphony Orchestra.
Speaking for one member of the family of RCA, the National Broadcasting Company.